number 11, which is a briefing and public hearing, and that's Grays Harbor Salmon Management Policy Review. And Steve, I'll turn it over to you.
Here's a kind of email you'd like to get. I was having some chest issues. The word cancer surfaced.
Excellent.
My name is Steve Teasfeld. I'm the Region 6 Fish Program Manager. We're going to help grow some of our youngsters today, so presentations will be led primarily by our district staff, Mike Scharf, and then later Chad Herring. So take it easy on them. But we'll be here to answer any questions that you might have.
Thanks for referring me as a youngster.
you dye your beard the same color as mine.
Yes, I do have children. I am Mike Scharf. I'm the District 17 Fisheries Biologist, and I'm here to kind of give a briefing and a rundown of the 2015 season that we had and how the policy helped us through our management decisions. I'm going to cover three things or five things up here. I'm going to review some of the elements of the policy that seem to be really driving our decision making on an annual basis, review how the 2015 season went, provide a little summary on how the fisheries went, how did our runs look like and whatnot. You've heard some of the public feedback. I'm going to summarize some more that we've heard and review what we just heard from. And then how do we move on through the 2016 year? There are three elements that were pretty much the foundation of the policy and that really kind of drive how we make decisions on an annual basis, enhance our conservation focus, reduce gear conflicts, and sharing of impacts and distribution of opportunity. There were a couple of things that really help us to kind of look and key on in on our conservation. When we are doing our preseason forecasting, if we see that we are not going to achieve the conservation objective by at least 10% above, we have a limit, an impact limit for that particular stock. It gives us a buffer in which to provide an opportunity for that stock to achieve the conservation. There is also another penalty that we kind of put on ourselves. Those stocks that haven't been achieving the conservation objectives on a consistent basis, this has kind of been coined the penalty box. If that stock hasn't achieved the conservation objective in 3 out of 5 years, we assess a 5% impact limit, no directed fishery on that stock. And as we're scheduling our fisheries on other stocks, we have a 5% impact limit of all WDFW fisheries, recreational and commercial. So there are two elements that are enhancing our focus on conservation. Gear conflict was another big issue that we heard during the development of the policy. One of the major pieces to help with that was a concept of trying to allow a few days a week for fish to move through the system without having to deal with nets. The 4-3 principle was developed. This is basically scheduling only 4 days a week with nets and have 3 days consistently each week free of nets. This is not a Quinault policy, so it's an issue we have to deal with. And the other key element that is a major part of the policy and that affects our annual decisions are how do we deal with impacts and distribution of the fisheries? And the policy has guided us and directed us to, you know, achieve our conservation objectives first, and then provide a meaningful recreational opportunity for Chinook, and manage our WDFW commercial fisheries towards other stocks, coho and chum. And along with that, while we are managing our commercial fisheries to chum and coho, we have impact limits incidental on Chinook. In the hump tulip side, in 2015, we had a fairly robust forecast. So when we went through our planning, we had a 5.4% incidental impact on hump tulips Chinook. And in Chalice, although we did have a strong forecast, we're in the penalty box on that stock, so we were limited to a 0.8. Those are sliding scales. They are designed to go along with forecasted run sizes. On the hump tulip side, that scale runs from 1.2% up to 5.4%, depending on the size of our forecast. On the Chehalis, 0.8 is the low end of the scale, and it goes up to 5.8, depending on where we are in the forecast and do we have any other constraints. So those are the three key elements that kind of help really guide us each year that are in the policy. So I'd like to move on now to kind of summarize a little bit how the planning process went in 2015. We had some constraining stocks going into the season that we knew of. Our natural origin coho and the hump tulips have been not performing nearly as well as we'd like. The forecast was below goal even before starting the season. So we had a 5% incidental impact limit on that stock. Our Chehalis River Natural Chinook, again, in the penalty box. So again, we had a 5% incidental impact limit on that particular stock. And because it was in the penalty box, we had our 0.8% limit during our commercial fisheries. I'd also like to point out that going into the season, all of our forecasts were greater than 10% of all of our conservation goals, except for our natural origin hump tulips coho. So we didn't have any other limitations to really work on, just the hump tulips natural coho and Chehalis natural Chinook. So we crafted our fisheries with those things in mind and keeping in mind other aspects of the policy. Well, of course, there's always difficulties in any process. The policy calls for specific sharing numbers between in the recreational fisheries, in river versus marine fisheries. There are specific numbers and they're difficult to hit. The two fisheries are a little bit different. Marine fisheries tends to be a shorter duration. They're the first group that encounter fish as fish move into the bay. River fisheries are extended over a much larger area, longer period of time. So it's difficult to hit those numbers precisely. We also had an issue and ongoing with our Chehalis natural fall Chinook in the penalty box. 2015, we had a fairly large forecast, so there were harvestable surplus. We were limited to a certain number that we could take, and some of those anticipated savings were utilized by the Quinaults. They managed to a conservation goal for the bay, and there were some available fish there. Another difficulty was in that 4-3 principle. The difficulty here is that you've got two managing groups managing commercial fisheries, developing schedules based on their own objectives and needs. And when they come together, inevitably, we want to fish sometimes on the same weeks and the same days. And This is not a Quinault policy, so it kind of is incumbent on us to look for ways to find that 3 days per week with no nets. And in 2015, as moving some of our days around, trying to go after the abundant coho that we thought were coming back, we found some open weeks, plugged them in there, and that put us a little bit over on our chum conservation. We didn't get any help from our Quinault counterparts, and so it was difficult to actually try to find where we can get a meaningful commercial fishery and still maintain the 4-3 principle. So those are some of the things that went on during our planning process. I'd like to move on to how did we do in 2015. Quickly, all of our sport catch numbers are estimates. We don't have our CRC data at this time, and so we're just dealing with estimates. We had a very strong Chinook fishery early in the season on the Hump Tulips River. We had a lot of good reports from our sport guys out there, and they were, oh, thank you. So we had a pretty good fishery, good start to the season. As it went on, we achieved our conservation objectives for both of our Chinook stocks, for the chum, and I also want to throw in all of the WDFW hatchery programs achieved their production goals, even our coho. But as everywhere else, the coho run did not materialize. We all know this wasn't a localized phenomenon. This was basically a Pacific Coast-wide deal. Many stocks came in at 30% of what was forecasted. We saw very similar things in Grays Harbor. One of the things that we did that I think it was a big step is WDFW looked for some in-season management. We saw that there was an issue in our chum, and we looked for tools in which we could use to see about how we thought we were going to do. And it was apparent that we had potentially issues of not achieving our conservation objectives for coho, so we made a move. We made a management decision. We reduced some of our fisheries, and it turned out that was the right thing to do. It wasn't very popular, but it appears that that's what we should have done. And with that said, we don't expect that we're going to achieve our natural coho conservation objectives this year. I'll touch a little bit about that a little bit more. I'll just run through real quick our individual stocks and how well they did. For spring Chinook, we have a conservation objective of 1,400 fish. We had a fairly robust forecast of 3,574. We escaped 1,841, so we achieved our conservation objective. One thing I noticed here is we didn't achieve our preseason forecast, so maybe that's something I need to look at a little deeper to figure out. That was a little bit high on our forecast there. Chinook, on our natural Chinook in the Chehalis River, we have a conservation objective of just under 9,880. We had a really fairly large preseason forecast of over 19,000. However, again, we were in the penalty box, so we have a couple other management objectives. Keep our incidental impacts below 5% or 5% or less, and to manage our commercial fishery to 0.8% or less. Our escapement estimate is 14,000, and again, I caution, this is that number is going to change as we get more data and evaluate it, but it's a pretty robust estimate. And our estimated run size was just over 23,000, so we had a pretty good return of Chinook this year. As for our other objectives, our estimate for our total incidental impact rate of 3.88% for all of our WDFW fisheries is below our goal. So we hit our target there. We hit the target on our commercial fishery impacts. It was 0.44%. We saw something very similar in the hump tulips. Conservation objective of 3,620. We had a forecast of just over 7,400. We did have another objective to meet incidental impacts during our commercial fishery to be 5.4% or less. Our estimated forecast or escapement is 4,800. Again, we achieved our conservation objective there. And you'll notice that our commercial fishery impact is 0%. The 2C fishery was closed in response to our coho, low coho returns. So that fishery didn't occur. So thus, no impact. Coho. Shayless Natural Origin Coho has a 28,506 conservation goal. We had a fairly robust forecast of nearly 122,000, very similar to what actually returned in 2014. Planning fisheries around that number, we still guessed that we would have more than double our conservation goal in returning to the gravel. Well, it looks like we had about 20,000 natural origin coho return, escaping the fisheries, and a run size of about 31,800. So we didn't achieve that conservation objective. Same way with our natural origin coho and the hump tulips. Coming into the season, we were below the conservation goal. We only had 5,861 fish that we thought we were going to cross the bar. So we were already below our conservation objective. So we also had another limitation on that stock, which was the 5% incidental impact during all of our fisheries. Well, our estimate of 820 fish escaping to the gravel is pretty low. Again, not achieving our conservation goal there. I will say that the other objective on this stock were achieved. Our total impact, incidental impact, was only 1.32%. Don't want to shine a light on that, but it was an achievement there. Moving on to chum. Again, conservation objective of 21,000. We had a forecast that was above that in 2015. Our escapement estimate this year is 33,705, achieving our conservation objective there. Had a run size of nearly, of about 47,000. So another objective achieved there. I want to show what the commercial fishery looked like in 2015. These numbers are actual catch, and the Chinook numbers there are hatchery origin. This is pretty indicative and reflective of what actually returned in 2015, a low number of coho and a little bit higher number of chum than what we predicted. It kind of shows that that's a pretty small commercial harvest there compared to what we predicted. Some of the other things that there are a couple other things I want to touch on that aren't, they're in the policy, but they're not an annual harvest, directly annual harvest management issue. In 2015, we developed a plan to evaluate the chum escapement estimate methodology. We provided that plan to the Quinaults and the Shayless tribe. Both are very excited, willing to participate and help us collect data. Right now, it's a two-year project. And it's part of one of the things in the policy that asks us to look at how we are doing in our escapement estimate methodology. Also want to talk a little bit about the Wainuchi mitigation plan. You've heard a lot of it already this morning. Work had gone on this year with our constituents to develop a draft plan, and that plan was submitted to the Quinaults. I won't get into any more details. You've heard enough on that so far. But that was how the season went. Kind of a quick briefing there. Some of the public comments that we heard, you've heard most of them already. I'll touch on a few more briefly. There's a feeling that the policy is continuing to limit our commercial fisheries, limiting them to an incidental impact on Chinook, being limited by the penalty, and also the 4-3 has had limitations. I'll also comment that we've also heard that the 4-3 is doing exactly what it was designed to do, provide some passage for fish, not having to deal with nets. We also heard some of the concern of our impacts that are occurring in our northern fisheries. I think Tim Hamilton said it pretty well. And so I won't go on. He does better at this stuff than I do. We also heard this morning the in-river fishermen felt that they took the brunt of the conservation this year. A lot of those fisheries do occur late October into November. That's when those coho move up into the river systems. That's when they get their opportunity at the fish, and they're right. That's when the fisheries were restricted. Partly due to that, there's some continued trust issues with our public. And as you also heard, there is definitely frustration in not getting the Wainuchi mitigation plan completed. So in summary, just a quick summary here, there were some conservation objectives that we achieved this year, and there were some that we didn't achieve. We met our hatchery production goals, but our coho were very disappointing. We also developed some in-season tools in which to help us get through some of these tough seasons, and it showed we made some tough decisions that were the right decisions. We also initiated an evaluation of our chum escapement methodology. That's going to be a two-year plan, and we've got the first year of data, field data collected. So at this time, the staff isn't recommending any major changes as we move forward. And what do we have to look forward to this year? It's going to be another difficult year. Our coho forecasts are not promising. We know that we're going in the penalty box on our Chehalis River natural Chinook. We know that our Hump Tulips natural coho forecasts are far below what they need to be. And there is a chance that our Chehalis natural coho may be in a limitation, a 5% limitation. There are two reasons why that's still kind of up in the air. We get a ocean escapement from PFMC when they do their three ocean fisheries proposals. When that final one is decided, then we will finally get the actual ocean escapement across the bar. And just to touch briefly, this is the only forecast that hasn't been agreed to with the Quinault Tribe. We're still working on different methodologies there. So we won't know right away if we are going to have a 5% limit on natural urgent coho in the Chehalis. We're going to continue our work on our evaluation of our chum escapement methodology, continue to refine our in-season tools so that we can make decisions as we see issues come up. And as you've heard the director and Ron, we're going to really push the mitigation, Wainuchi mitigation plan to fruition. That's all I have. If you have any questions...
Yes. Yeah. Thanks. Great presentation. Mike, the chum escapement methodology, can you give us the highlights of what's of interest there? What are we trying to improve?
The original methodology was developed, I think, back in 1978 or thereabouts. And it has been several decades since some of the biologists back then has said that it needed to be reviewed and updated. We have funding available that allowed us to hire extra staff and to put together just an evaluation to see how well we are in doing our escapement for CHUM. Some of the indexes that have been used for decades, river systems have changed a little bit. Just for instance, in 2015, we had a low flow year. One of our indexes did not receive water until midway through the season. So we really want to make sure that we're doing and making the right estimate for our CHUM. And so this is the first step.
And so that would mean that if you decide that this is, that you want to shift to a different methodology, that could lead to different escapement goals.
Yes, the plan is designed so that it can relate back to historical data. So the indexes that are being used will be incorporated in the plan so that we can compare apples to apples. And yes, if we get a robust new methodology, then the escapement goal will be evaluated.
So is this similar to what I've been hearing is of interest in Willapaw with reexamining the CHUM escapement values?
Well, I think there's two separate pieces there, Commissioner Wecker. First is, are the methods that we're using to estimate the CHUM escapement correct? And we have to get that piece first for Grays Harbor. That was part of what we were asked to do. As Mike noted, we had funding through the Chehalis Dam project to complete that task. Even after we get that done, I think we need to be careful about when we might commit to reevaluating the goal, because we may need some years of data with, if we change our methods, we may need to conduct a few years of estimates before we have data that's good enough to allow us to evaluate a goal. On the Willapa side, we are actually directed in the policy to evaluate the goal. I do have some concerns about our escapement methodology there as well, but nonetheless, we are tasked, I believe, by September to review and recommend a if there should be a change to the spawning escapement goal. So we have taken a fair look at that already, and I anticipate we will meet that deadline of having that completed by September. Yeah. So in two separate issues in a way.
Yeah, but somewhat related, and it leads me to think about how many ways in which we refer to conservation objectives as well. You know, we've talked about that a little bit, where we have different ways of getting at our conservation objectives. And I think, you know, I might propose to the commission a briefing on how we set escapement values in different places, just because I'm not really sure myself how we do that. Be interested. Thanks.
That sounds like a John Long task to me.
Mr. Q.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Thank you for the presentation. Your supervisor has trained you well.
Thanks. Thanks, Steve.
So I asked this question last evening or late afternoon as part of the Fish Committee. I see the department. Well, let me back up just so everybody we're on the same page. The policy does have a adaptive management provision, which kind of requires the commission staff to annually review the policy and its performance, and then under the adaptive management provision make changes as necessary. Is that fair characterization of the policy?
There's certainly an adaptive management principle in there.
Okay.
For us to consider.
Okay. So, and I see that, you know, the staff is not recommending any changes at this point to the policy.
That's correct.
Okay. So then my guess, my question last night was, was there any internal discussion about potential changes? And then, you know, that's the first part of the question. And then the second part of the question is, you know, why did you end up where you were at in terms of your recommendation of no changes?
We have had various internal debates on many parts of the policy through the last 2 years, Commissioner Kehoe. Recall last spring we actually considered adjusting the 4-3 slightly to what we thought was a more favorable schedule to the recreational sector, basically removing some commercial fishing on Sunday. I know we didn't have any support from anyone to go forward with that from the public. It was, I think, maybe it's a fear that once we start tweaking the policy, that they don't know where the tweaking is going to stop and where it will end up at. Certainly have heard considerable comments that the principles of the policy make it difficult for a meaningful commercial fishery. And I know the commercial sector would suggest that some of the pieces, like the 4-3, need adjustment. Potentially, the priority for recreational on Chinook. We're not allowed to have a directed Chinook fishery for the commercial sector. The commercial sector would say that that's something that they would like us to consider. We've heard for the first time this year some folks realizing that we're not getting support from the treaty tribes on the penalty box, that perhaps it's time to consider whether we should be penalizing ourselves and knowing that we're having difficulty reaching agreement with the tribes to not utilize those fish, that maybe we shouldn't penalize ourselves and we should allow ourselves to go ahead and harvest those when we're exceeding the goal. So all of those concepts have been kicked around over time. As we noted last night, the first year of the policy, the commercial sector did have a higher-than-expected ex-vessel value. We know that last year they had about half of what the policies envisioned was going to be an ex-vessel value for the commercial sector. So do we make a change already, knowing that we had 1 year that was really good and 1 year that was really bad? From staff perspective, maybe a little early. Commission may have a different perspective on that. What we do know is that it's going to be extremely difficult to craft any commercial fisheries this year with the coho limitations that we're going to have. And you can hear either perspective on that from the constituents. The commercial folks would ask for some flexibility from the policy, implementing some of the adaptive management. But we've also heard on the recreational side, well, maybe this is a year not to have any commercial fisheries. So, you know, we're trying our best to implement what the policy asks us to do. And the policy does not tell us not to have commercial fisheries. It does provide for those. Our intent at this point is try to go forward. If there's discussion that the commission has regarding some flexibility that they'd like us to consider, that would be would probably be an appropriate time to have that discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have a number of folks that want to provide input, and given the number, please do keep your comments to the beep. Call you up two at a time. Dave Hamilton and Joe Durham, please. Dave, take it away.
Thank you. Good morning. Please bear with me. This is probably the thing I do least well in life, sitting in front of something like this. My name is Dave Hamilton. I would like to address two issues. First, since the adoption of the Grays Harbor Management Plan, we have all struggled as was implemented, but staff has struggled more than the citizens of the Chehalis Basin. District 17 staff have never received the support necessary to fully do their job prior to the GMP, and even more so now. Just things, the tools needed to do one's job with some hope of success. It's just like any other job. You have to have the tools or you just ain't going nowhere, okay? In Willapa, this was not the case, as that support was provided internally. But that did not happen in Grace Harbor. That absolutely did not happen, okay? I am asking this be addressed immediately, as issues such as in-season monitoring, which is critical, in particular with the commercial fisheries, any management strategy will not be possible. The failure to provide the tools to District 17 staff or even recognize the needs is a serious issue, and frankly, we failed staff. And we, commissioners, I mean you, me, the director, we failed staff. This is one staff can say we failed them. We sent them forth on a task, expected them to see, and created a circular firing squad. That's not appropriate, okay? And so we all have to accept some responsibility for asking more of the staff than we provided support to do, okay? It just wasn't right. My second issue is 3-5, and I really defer most of my comment and get out of here because you're running late to the advocates, Tim Hamilton, and he will address it. But the 3-5 penalty box provision, when the policy was adopted, I and several others who've been around the agency and the fish for a long time, we recognized the problem, okay? And I asked staff for the opportunity to ask for reconsideration or clarification of just what the commissioners meant, okay? And staff had pretty well circled the wagons because us, commercial, everybody was after them, so it was kind of like they were just trying to survive as a policy was implemented, and they were getting beat up pretty severely. So time has passed, but this, I didn't say much last year because I didn't think there was any need. The situation wasn't there. But this year it is in there. The 3-5 policy had a mathematical figure that went with the word escapement, and we're using the wrong number in the wrong time frame. And it all evolved out of the circumstances when the policy was adopted, actions by PFMC and the feds and tribes. It all comes into a kind of a peak. And when it popped out the other end, staff was doing it directly as asked. But my request for clarification, they were not going near that policy and stuff. So, Mr. Hamilton, Tim will address it better because, frankly, you don't want me to try to explain it to you with my brain. Just let him do it. But it is an issue that can be resolved rather simply. It really can. It's just that we have to recognize there was an error made and get it taken care of.
Thank you, Dave. Yes, go ahead.
So are you asking the commission to reconsider the penalty box provision itself?
No.
Just rather than how it's
commissioners,
applied.
Okay, Mr. Keel, at the time of implementation, right, the old escapement goal was 14,000 and some, and the Quinault Nation had been fishing to a different goal for some years and was going to PFMC, and the agency hadn't objected and kind of supported for lowering the Chinook escapement goal in the Chehalis. So the commission adopted a plan based on the old escapement, you know, what was there. Right after that, it all changed. Now we have a new escapement goal, 9,820. But the penalty box is based on the old number that really had been contested by the Quinaults, okay, and they set out through grants and stuff to document it and get it lowered. So we're being penalized for something here that was then disapproved and rearranged, and this number. So it's like you got two sets of numbers, and there was nothing done wrong. The chain of events that led you to where we are simply outpaced everything around. Unless you'd been around the agency for 35 years like I have, you really didn't catch it. And so I caught it and asked, but I just didn't. The agency staff did not choose to go for clarification.
And I don't know all the numbers, but yeah, so
that's why you don't want me to explain it. I'm terrible.
But the principle, though, is that you believe this penalty box provision, which, you know, was a big issue, okay, is too constraining. Is that, in summary, do I get that right?
No, it's not too constraining. We're using the wrong starting point number.
Okay.
I'm a strong supporter of 3-5, and I hate that thing, sir. But we need to use the right numbers so we don't kill ourselves. Okay.
Thank you. Melanie Ravagilia and Joe, you're up.
Thank you again for the opportunity. I would like to address one thing that's in the policy, and I want you to think about this with open minds and conservation, and not the fact that it's your job to manage what we're talking about here. We cannot continue fishing into, if we want to rebuild our wild runs, we cannot continue fishing into the escapement goal with the 5% that it's allowed, and I think that's allowed pretty much statewide. We need to set that policy differently. 5% of the escapement, when it's below the escapement, will reduce those fish by several hundred fish, not getting to the spawning grounds. That's a concern that's bothered me for a long time, and I know it's a policy, and it's written into the policy. If it has to open the policy to change that, I would regret that because I would throw it wide open again. But think about it, and with your minds and with your heart and with conservation in mind on rebuilding our wild stocks, where we will not have to come to these meetings year after year after year and fight to get a meaningful fishery to fish for the scrap fish that we have left to fish on. It puts our returning healthy runs in jeopardy, and our weak stocks, we're killing them off needlessly with commercials, recreational, and all fishers that are fishing into the escapement goal. We cannot continue that and come up with a healthy fishery in this state. The only other issue I wanted to talk about again was what happened. I was in Hawaii when I got the phone call that we were going to curtail our fisheries, and I said, whatever the state needs to do, let's do it. And I think I told Steve Theisfeld the same thing before it happened. And I got a call that the commercials are down and we're going to be down next week and God knows when. A verbal agreement between the Quinaults and the state is not workable. Quinault says for the rest of the season, shut down all your salmon fishery and all your game fisheries in the rivers in the Chehalis Basin. But we opened up for probably close to a better part of 3 weeks or 4 weeks where you could fish on those stocks in the upper reaches. Ironically, wrong thing to do. We're fishing on right in the spawning grounds. The people who like to fish from boats had no opportunity, for power boats had no opportunity to get in to fish some of these fisheries. It was open to the guides who enjoyed the crap out of it, although they didn't catch a whole lot of fish because they weren't there to be caught. Let's not get caught in that trap again. If we have a shutdown in the basin, let's make it basin-wide and have an agreement between the state and the tribes to open on the same day, not hold off 16 days and after the tribes go back in and open it up. Let's be honest and let's work with our hearts and our minds for our wild fish and for the recreational people who pay for fish. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Robert Rayo, please, and Melanie.
So for the record, it's Melanie Rabaglia, and I want to thank you, commissioners, the new director, and staff for this time and opportunity to address you guys and the Grace Harbor policy. I view this as my opportunity to give my State of the Union like the staff gave to you about how the season went. So it's my opportunity to tell you how I think the season went. We still appreciate the focus of conservation, restoration of our wild salmon, and it, like the Pacific Salmon Treaty, is also a complex process. With our rules, our principles, and having to work with the Quinault, which is seeming to be ever complex. Also, limitations from Alaska, Canada, and also natural predators are all to blame. This year, we weren't fishing for any kings, but yes, we were supposed to be able to fish for Silver's Coho. The in-season management curtailed that, and yeah, I heard from staff that people weren't happy. Some people weren't happy because they thought it should have been closed sooner, not because it was closed, because it should have happened sooner. In-season management is working, but it needs to work better. Forecasts. guess or estimates? I'd like to get a crystal ball that would give me a better estimate, and it seems recently that the Quinaults have a better estimate on what they think next year is going to be, and their number is less than what we even caught this year. So now we're all sitting around questioning how they got that number. Well, maybe it's a good number, and we should start to look at it and not question where they got it from. Escapement methodology. What I heard was is that it hasn't been redefined since, what, the 80s? Does anybody ever consider other issues, i.e. global warming, i.e. the blob? There's so many other things that are out there. So we're back to in-season management needs to happen sooner, faster, to save our fish. Problems, issues. We saw it on the list. 4-3. From my opinion, you bet it works. Yes, the river anglers took the brunt of the problems, and yes, there are public trust issues. But each of these help working it out, help the exposure, and help with those issues. The Quinault, that's another story in its entirety. I don't know what to think of that other than we need to open up more to them. We need to open our doors. We need to talk to them more. And if they turn us down, we can at least say we keep trying, we kept trying, we kept trying. And in another aspect of it, we need to make our policies, and we're going to do what we're going to do, and we're going to set a timeline, and we're going to do it. And we're going to tell the Quinault we're going to do it, not ask them in certain positions. We need to move forward. We need to be the stewards of the fish. We need to be the stewards of land. We need to tell them. These are all baby steps. We need to keep moving forward. We need to refine everything to meet our objectives. Ultimately, if this year leads to no commercial fishing, so be it. If this year leads to no recreational fishing, so be it. That's the way it is. That's the way it is. We need to save our fish. What happened last year was awful. From a personal perspective, we got a good amount of fish, but others didn't, and I can see the future. This is bad. Bad, bad, bad. We need to do better. Thank you.
Thank you, Melanie. Any questions? Tim Hamilton, please, and Robert.
My name is Robert Rayo. I'm from Alma, Washington. We need to continue the 4-3 process. The idea that some people feel that the commercial fishermen in Grays Harbor did not have a reasonable season or a meaningful season is not the question here. We've all known that the commercial gill netting in Grays Harbor is a dying thing. Our runs have been continually going downhill. The commercial end of it has been effectively taken over by the Quinault. They manage to supply the stores with fish. They're not fishing for sustenance. They're commercial fishermen, like our people are commercial fishermen. You know, we complain that the Quinault use a different method for judging fish in Grays Harbor than the state does, where the state judges the stocks on individual rivers, and the Quinault judges it on a bay-wide basis. And the state says, well, that's not a good thing. Well, let me tell you something. The state's a bunch of hypocrites, because that's what they do in Willapa Bay. So how can we have two methods of trying to identify the stocks of fish in particular systems, and they're like, what, 100 miles away, 50 miles away from each other, and they're two completely different things? We need to get on the same page as the Quinault Nation. I've spoken to Dave Bingaman. He's a reasonable guy. And I think a lot of the conflicts that are being portrayed between all the white fishermen and the non-tribal fishermen and the Indians is really a lot of posturing that needs to be gotten beyond. We need to address the Pacific Marine Council as a group. We need to address our government as a group and demand better treaty negotiations with Canada. We need to put the boots to Alaska and find out why all our fish are being intercepted up there. They have an attitude that the salmon feed up there, so they have a stake on them. Well, we tell them that the halibut feed down here, and they go ahead and harvest all our halibut too. Where does this stop? These people are organized criminals in the greater sense of conservation, and we're not looking at it that way. Our staff at WDFW and our prior directorship has been geared specifically towards increasing commercial harvest to the point where fish have been taken out of the equation. And that's not right. We've all been willing to give up our fishing. When we gave up fishing a few years ago to stop fishing from Mexico to Canada, it worked. Our fish came back. Alaska didn't go for that, but we did, and we saw the writing on the wall. And it's about time we start taking that attitude. We've got an attitude within the department. We've got an attitude on this commission itself where certain members feel that the commercial interests supersede everybody. And that's wrong. I've been criticized for not going to North of Falcone processes and speaking at these things. Well, I'm going to North of Falcone processes, and I'm paying attention to what's going on. And I see a lot of people aren't doing their jobs here because our political system is being corrupted by commercial interests. And I'm personally tired of it. It happens from Alaska to the Mexican border. And I think we need to address these issues. I welcome you as a new director. I'm glad to see you're here. I'm hoping that your influence will prevent that kind of cancerous attitude of commercial exploitation from ruining our fisheries for the future of all. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Alan, thank you very much. Alan Hollingsworth and Tim.
Hey, thank you. For the record, Tim Hamilton, Twin Harbors Fish and Wildlife Advocacy. I'm going to try to take a swing at this issue with the penalty box. What I'm going to suggest to you is we're not in the penalty box. We never have been in the penalty box. The department made an interpretation of this policy and stuck us in there. And as a result of that, you have us having the department with its commercial and recreational sector limited, leaving harvestable Chinook on the table, at which time the Quinaults, their competitor, because I'm sorry, there's no co-management here. This is dual management competitors after 150 years trying to screw each other. Okay, that's the history of the whole thing. And what do? They leverage. So they're coming in. They're taking those fish we're leaving on the table. And guess what? They've done it 2 years in a row. Now there's an incentive for them to continue to do this and keep us in our own penalty box. Can we get out without amending the policy? Yes. If you go to the policy, it says very simply, if the number of natural origin spawners was less than the goal in 3 out of the last 5 years, the goal, we're using 2 goals. This policy doesn't say goals, plural. One, the Quinaults are using the new goal. We're using the old goal. And the policy clearly says goal. What is the goal? All we have to do is use the goal agreed to by PMFC in this department, and we're out of the penalty box. That gives us opportunity for commercial and recreational fishing on these Chinook. It allows us to balance our share under 50-50 under Bolt, and we may even have some incidental capability on Coho. If you keep us in the penalty box, the Quinaults are going to eat our lunch, and they're going to push the conservation standard, and guess what? The public will lose faith. This is simple. I don't believe the department, the director has a requirement, courtesy, but has a total capability of taking us out of the penalty box tomorrow morning, right now. I would love to see him do it with communications with the Fish Committee or whatever that status is. But take us out of the penalty box. We never were in it. We never were in it. It's nuts. It's nuts. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Yes. Mr. Keough.
I just want to make sure that I'm following you, Mr. Hamilton. So you mentioned 2 different goals, right? There's a PFMC goal, and then there's some other goal, right? Mm-hmm. So I take it then you suggest that the department should be adhering to this PFMC goal, which I assume is lower than this other goal that you're referring to.
Correct.
Okay, gotcha. See,
now, the net effect of this is simple. Don't hold me to this, but I'm going to pull it from my brain, and my brain is fried this morning. But I do believe if you use the current escapement goal that is agreed upon by the department, the Quinaults, and PMFC approved, and you put that in those spreadsheets, you will see we made escapement every year except for 2009. Well, by getting out of the penalty box, we're not threatening conservation standards at all. Not a one. We're just giving some of our opportunity for our fish managers to give fishing opportunity to their sector instead of leaving it all on the table for the Quinaults. That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No,
One more. Yep.
Chaplain, I don't have a question for you. Is Steve Thiesfeld in the room?
Yes, sir.
Can you come up here for a second? Because we've heard this line of thinking several times today, and I made some notes here, and I kind of want to learn from you. So the Grays Harbor Chinook escapement goal was being evaluated during the development of the Grays Harbor Salmon Management Commission policy. And the previous escapement goal was approximately 12,400. Am I correct in that assumption?
For Chehalis site, it was 12,364.
So the newly adopted escapement goal is 9,880 and has been in place for 2 years, 2014 and 15, correct?
Correct.
A management provision of the policy guides staff to review the period of 5 years of Chinook escapement. If that escapement is not met in more than three of the five-year review, harvest constraints would be in place.
Correct.
Okay. So administratively, what would occur if we started this review from the agreement of the new escapement goal?
So you'll see up on the screen there I've got past performance for Chehalis and Hump Tulips fish. You can see that if I could just stand up.
Can you make it bigger at all?
Bigger? I think so. My computer may die here on me here in a second, so... So what you can see is the goal was changed from 12.4 in 2013 to 9.9 approximately in 2014. So the green shows the years that we have made the goal under the current, made a escapement under the current goal. We did in 2015, we did not in 2014. And then we had applied the old goal to our performance from 13, 12, 11. Because our goal was the 12-4. So we felt we needed to evaluate ourselves against that old goal. That was our objective. Did we meet that objective?
When we implemented the policy.
Right.
Okay.
So that's why we've said we're in the penalty box, is we have not made three out of five. We've missed three out of five. So what I thought I heard you say, Commissioner Carpenter, was what would happen if we started in 2014? We would be one out of two. So I don't know, what does that mean to me as the manager? I'm not sure. I guess we can't say we didn't make it three out of five because we've only got 2 years. But, you know, even if you applied this new goal back to 2013 and 2012, we didn't make it.
It's like we're playing two different kinds of baseball here. And I guess I want to get my arms around exactly what our management goal is with some consistency. And I have less understanding of it now today than I did yesterday.
Well, what our policy directs us to do is manage separately Hump and Chehalis. So we're trying to manage Chehalis for this 9,900 here. And try to manage Hump Tulips for the 36. What Mr. Hamilton did point out is that the Quinault tribe manages on the aggregate. So they would manage for the 13-5, the combination of these two. And I can't do the math in my head fast enough to find out if we've made it 3 out of 5 if it was 13-5 aggregate. But... you know, the policy very clearly directs us to manage separately, not as an aggregate. In fact, we're supposed to, the policy directs us to try to convince the Quinault tribe to manage separately. So,
Mr. Chair, I just want to say something. I think it's important. And I know we have a lot more people to testify, but I don't recall when we put this policy together, there was any question about the escapement goal that we were using at the time for purposes of defining the penalty box. I don't recall. Maybe there was a question about that, but I don't recall it. And as far as the Quinault kind of them taking advantage of any savings. That was clearly kind of contemplated and discussed. And as I recall, there was still the idea, well, let's go forward. And it's always good to have a bigger escapement goal and to allow for a buffer. So that was just my understanding. And so I think it's an interesting conversation that we're having here now today. So not to say that, you know, anybody is right or wrong, but I'm just kind of trying to recall what we did and why we did it.
You have some comments, Ron?
No, sorry.
Go ahead.
Similar memory to what you stated. We didn't know what the escapement goal was going to be. Okay. Now, as far as having a bigger escapement goal, having a conservation value, yes, but the point we need to make sure we understand is the conservation goal is the 9,800. They've already lowered the conservation's goal. The department is already fishing to that. Okay? So what we're doing is keeping ourselves in a penalty box based off of a failure to meet a conservation goal of times past. Okay, so that's the whole point I said, was all you have to do is recognize what the escapement goal is, and the penalty box goes away.
Well, I guess what I keep thinking here is adaptive management and what that means. I mean, we probably need some question of that, but does it mean that, as Commissioner Carpenter questioned, when the escapement goal changes, then we change our management by readjusting the time for the penalty box? Is that adaptive management? You know, it's just sort of this general term, but what do we mean? We've changed the escapement goal. Do we change the timing for the penalty then?
And ironically, it's under the category of adaptive management.
Yeah, well, whatever that means.
Yeah.
Questions from the commission?
Done.
Ron has some.
You're okay. I can sit. Commission, Ron Warren, Fish Program. So, Commissioner, thank you for the comments. Number one, under adaptive management reads, annual fishery management review. The department shall annually evaluate fishery management tools and parameters and identify improvements as necessary to accurately predict fishery performance and escapement. This could be one of those things under adaptive management that we consider to move.
Agreed.
Just wanted to offer that.
One other question. I'm confused as to why we, and you can, I'm sure you can straighten me out on this, Steve, if you would. Why do we manage one basin on the aggregate and the other on stocks?
There's a long history. So I will just walk you through what I recognized when we did Willapa, where, frankly, in Willapa, we've got both going on in there. We're trying to manage Chinook to a finer scale than we are Coho and Chum. Part of that, I think, is our recognition that there may be a little more site fidelity to certain of those fish than others. We felt on Willapa that our aggregate goals had served us well for Coho and Chum, and there were folks from the public that were suggesting we needed a finer scale of management in Willapa, and we suggested that, look, this is complex enough as it is, and we were advocating from our side is to not make it more complex than it needed to be. On the Chinook side, we knew that we had specific primary systems that we were trying to ensure that those primary systems were achieving their goals when they had not been. and we ended up with a finer scale of management. From a management perspective, the more detailed you get, the harder the management becomes, and the more opportunity there is for disagreement amongst everybody as to whether you're achieving your goals or not. So we went down a road in Grays Harbor well before my time where we tried to separate those fisheries so that we could manage them on a finer scale. And my belief is it was intended to try to protect certain stocks. I know some other folks believe it was intended to allow more access to stocks. But in my mind, the aggregate makes it easier to allow access to stocks. As you separate them, it gets harder and harder to manage. So we've done it to ourselves, I guess, is part of the answer I have for you. And we did it to ourselves in Willapaw just last June. So
I guess my response would be, what do we know about stock composition in Grays Harbor that would lead us from a scientific point of view to manage individual stocks rather than on aggregate?
We don't know enough to say for sure that they need to be managed separately. We right now on a genetic level, we can tell Grays Harbor from Willapaw, but we can't tell within each basin where those fish are from.
Right.
So I know even just a few years ago, we were trying to manage Grays Harbor with specific targets for each tributary, and we were changing fishing regulations in each tributary if that tributary wasn't meeting a specific goal. And yeah, with the policy, we've kind of said, no, we have two goals, one for Chehalis and one for Hump Tulips, and we aren't going to manage the Wainuchi separately from the Satsup, from the Skookumchuck. It's all Chehalis. So certainly there's an opportunity for us to review the genetic material and find out do we have enough information to suggest that they should be separately managed or not. From my standpoint, if it was an aggregate, my life would get a whole lot easier. So
Steve and Ron and the director, I guess, I have a question about the penalty box / buffer that we put in place. Seems to curtail fishing opportunity more so than we intended to do. Obviously, conservation is our almighty responsibility and goal. But if we're not getting cooperative management from the co-managers and being respectful of those fish we want to pass through, I sort of have a problem staying the course on that and not adjusting our fishing accordingly. What do you want us to do? What would a different tool in your toolbox give you?
So I do recall some of the discussion during the Grays Harbor policy development, and I think that there was a hope, a belief from the department that Quinault would stay to their 50% share as we move forward. They had typically done that based on the aggregate goal, which caused us a little bit of sharing issues. But I don't believe that it was anticipated that they would truly reach across the table to take some of the non-treaty share each and every time. I'm shooting from the hip here and realizing I've got a bunch of constituents right behind me listening, but perhaps guidance that if we are not able to keep Quinault to 50%, that we use the adaptive management to not implement the 3 out of 5. So our direction would be to try to negotiate them to 50%. And if we're there or close, that we would continue in the penalty box. But if they make it clear that they're going to reach across the table, then we adjust. That might be a solution.
Director, your views on that at this point, or do you want to talk about it?
I would like to have a little bit more information on how we got where we're at, but I think what Steve is saying makes some sense to me. We certainly need to be adaptive, and if we're saving fish only to be taken up by someone else, it doesn't make a lot of sense not to look at our objectives.
I have to say that I think part of the point, and we did this up with the SOLDOC recently, understanding that the Quileutes might take the wild steelhead we leave on the table. We were encouraged by the public to take the high road. If we allow the Quileutes to veto our high road, then we're out of options in terms of trying to get them to take the high road too. So I would think that this is such a central feature of what we just instituted that we definitely should not be deciding something with this limited amount of testimony and analysis. We need to understand, and I think the essence of what we've been told is that if we're fishing to this lower escapement, that's the problem. We're fishing to the lower escapement and still assuming a higher escapement when we talk about the penalty box. Those two things don't fit together. But we still want that penalty box. That's our conservation principle. And so before we start tweaking this in such a significant way, we need to understand what we're doing.
I guess I would just want to comment. I don't disagree with that in concept, Miranda, but if we have a penalty box, pass those fish through, do not take those fish in the spirit of them getting to the spawning beds, and other fishermen take those, we haven't accomplished anything.
Yeah, what I would, and I made the comment before that I really do believe that some of this has to be community, the Grays Harbor community most affected by what the Quinaults are doing, going and reaching out to the Quinaults, because they're people. I think they respond to public opinion, and that is our best hope. They are sovereign. They are co-managers. We can't force them, but we can appeal to them. We can persuade them. And I don't think the department has any monopoly on this. In fact, I think some of the more effective reaching out has to be the community. You guys know them. You go, your kids go to school together. You frequent the same businesses. So that's, I think, a promising direction.
Thank you, Steve. And I think with North of Falcon coming up, we will need direction on some of this, and we will continue this dialogue, but we do have to move along today. And poor Mr. Hollingsworth's been sitting over there taking a nap. So I'd like to call up Heath, too. Always a smile on his face. Alan.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commission members, Mr. Director. My name's Alan Hollingsworth, for the record. I'm representing several commercial fishermen today, the basketball tournaments and whatever's going on. They couldn't be here. First of all, commercials need, wild Chinook impact needs need to be raised. The commercials now doesn't have enough impacts to harvest very many coho and chum on the Chehalis. This results in the loss of several thousand dollars going to the community and the non-fishing general public access to fish their tax dollars help raise. My suggestion is a 40% commercial, 60% rec. On the 4-3, this needs to be changed to a sliding scale. An example, escapement goal for wild coho in the Chehalis is $28,500. My proposal would be under $40,000 prediction, you leave it at 4-3. $40,000 to $55,000, 5-2. $55,000 to $70,000, 6-1. Over $70,000, 7, and no days closed. This doesn't have to happen every week, but it gives the commercials an opportunity sometime in the month of October to harvest some coho if they have enough Chinook. The reason, the Quinaults on a big run fish 4 or 5 days a week. This leaves no time for the commercials. 2 or 3 days on a week run. So what happens? The commercials get to fish on a small run when there is no fish, and when there is lots of fish, they don't get to fish at all, or very little. This almost always leaves over escapement way above the goal. Large escapement doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have large returns the next generation. Marine Area 2-2 saltwater fishery has turned into a wild Chinook-directed catch-and-release fishery. Most anglers fish deep with heavy leads or downriggers near the bottom targeting Chinook, which they all have to release. Coho, which are supposed to be their catch, mostly runs in the top 10 feet of the water. My suggestion is no downriggers or lead balls over 2 ounces. This would allow the boats to fish on top where the coho are. I've heard people talking that they catch 20 wild Chinook a day and release them. That's going backwards on your escapements. Another thing, when runs are predicted to be 150% or more over escapement goals, and the WDF fishers are in the penalty box, some directed fisheries should be allowed. This year, the wild Chinook run is projected 197% over goal. That's 4,810 fish non-treaty share. Some of those fish should be taken. And since the Humptulus wild coho run will most likely never become a directed fishery for the commercial should be allowed a directed Chinook fishery before the coho arrive. This year, there are 7,330 Chinook available for harvest in the Humptulus. At least 1,000 of those should be made available for the commercials through a directed fishery before the coho arrives. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Norm, come on up. Heath, it's all yours.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, Chairman Smith, Commissioners, Director Unsworth. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. My goodness, getting into the weeds you guys are in the morning, so nothing as exciting as that on a Saturday morning. So thank you for your guys' service. So representing CCA Washington, CCA sent in a letter in advance on Thursday on providing comment on both of these policies, so I'll try to keep my comments brief. I also received a text from my wife who says my 9-month-old screaming baby is not having a great morning, so I may need to leave before the Willapa comment period, so I'm going to kind of address both if I can. I guess at the overarching level, I'd say stay the course on what you guys have been doing. I think you said it, Commissioner Carpenter, our number one responsibility is to conservation for both of these policies, and I think what you put together was an attempt to meet that goal. And, you know, we can get into this escapement issue. I think it's really unfair when we play by different rules, that's for sure. We've seen it in Puget Sound, north of Falcon issues, where we think we're playing by a set of the rules and they get changed. So certainly there needs to be something figured out with the Quinaults moving forward. But at the same time, I think if we fish to the lower goal all the time and you've had a history of missing it on a lot of these stocks, we've got to be careful with that too. So I have a lot of confidence in you guys to come to a good conclusion in this moving forward. Ultimately, it's about doing the right thing, because as we heard earlier, we're going to try to go to the Alaskans and convince them to reduce their harvest. Well, how are we going to do that if after 2 years it got tough, and let's say we changed things and said, well, that doing it the right thing is too tough, we don't like doing it. So it reminds me of the tragedy of the commons, listening to what's going on in Grays Harbor, because you have sport commercial, you have the Quinaults, and then you have all these fisheries in the ocean, and it's just crazy. So, you know, I think doing the right thing is where we start. We did provide some thinking moving forward, particularly as it relates to Willapa. Those are joint permits between Willapa and Columbia River. I was here, I was in Vancouver for the Columbia River review. That buyback fleet reduction effort, I don't know where that's at. A month later here, I know Commissioner Mankin was very interested in seeing that moving forward. I think it makes a lot of sense to look at the interplay with Willapa, and, you know, I think there's a little less interplay with Grays Harbor, but there might still be some because those are shared permits. It's Willapa, Columbia River, or it's Grays Harbor, Columbia River. So I just appreciate the time and look forward to working with you guys on these policies. I think they're incredibly important, both for conservation and for, you know, the economic benefit of these fisheries.
Thank you. Now you have to go be a dad.
I know.
Go. I'll make that official. Bob Lake, please. Are you out there, Bob? He was here.
Yeah, he's here.
Oh, there you are. Okay. Norm?
Thank you. For the record, my name is Norm Reinhardt. I represent the Kitsap Pogie Club. I'm here to talk about Grays Harbor, but perhaps in a broader way than what you may suspect. I'll probably continue these comments through the Willapa session. I agree with with Commissioner Wecker. Conservation should come first. We should continue to stay the course with the Grays Harbor policy. Adaptive management is fine. We need adaptive management. But my thought on adaptive management is we don't just change it to change year to year. Adaptive management should be utilized when we see an established trend, which takes more than just a year in salmon management. So until we start seeing an actual trend, perhaps we shouldn't change anything. We're here slicing each other's throats. I'm here to suggest this, that when I say each other's throats, I'm talking about the commercial fleets here, not happy with the recreational fleet, the recreational fleets here, not happy with the commercial fleet. No one's happy with the Quinault fleet, and the Quinaults are certainly not happy with our fleets. I believe that their thought on conservation is remove the non-tribal fishermen and conservation will take care of itself. I'm not convinced that that is the case. Doing anything with the 4-3 is nothing less than capitulation. What we're doing is we're allowing tribal treaty fishermen to force us into a posture of capitulation in the management of our fish. We are the terminal fishery, not just the recreational fleet, but also the commercial fleet and also the tribal entities within the state of Washington. We are the terminal fishery. And what's happening is our fisheries, I was talking about trends earlier, what's happening with our fisheries is over a period of decades, not just years, but over decades, many decades, we have watched the continual erosion of our inshore fisheries, of our terminal fisheries. We have watched one river after another take some sort of ESA action. We're not there yet in this particular area of the state, but our history shows that we are headed there. The genetic studies that will be coming out of a different section off the North River may prove that point. So, what's to happen? Well, I don't think we need to capitulate. I think we need to ask our federal regulators, our NOAA and the Bureau of Indian Affairs, to help us co-manage this. I'll continue this story in Willapa. Thank you.
Thank you, Norm. You always do the pogies proud. I'd like to see a pogie one day. It's on my wish list. Francis and Mr. Lake, it's yours.
My name is Bob Lake. Thank you, Commissioners, Commissioner Smith and Director Unsworth. First of all, I'd like to answer a couple questions that come up as arisen here. First of all, the thing on the Grays Harbor license renewal for commercial licenses, we have to have it bought by or opted out by September 12th, I believe it is. Last year, we didn't even find out what the season was going to be until about almost the 20th. So I opted out, so I didn't fish Grays Harbor last year. The difference is, if I would have purchased a license to fish it, would have been $585. If I opted out, it was $125. Not knowing what the season was going to be, I didn't fish. I paid $125. The other thing I would like to comment on, if, in fact, since you've cut the non-treaty commercial back in Grays Harbor, the last 2 years the Quinaults have taken a lot more Chinook than they would have taken if we would have had a season. For the simple reason, they call it foregone opportunity. There's not a damn thing we can do about it on the non-treaty side. Absolutely nothing, because they're co-managers. And I'll tell you something right now. We've fished alongside the Quinault before. We'll fish with them alongside them again if you guys will give us the opportunity to do that. They don't want to fish with us because they got the competition then. But we're willing to go in there and compete with them, you know. And another thing, as Alan Hollingsworth stated, there's some fish available that can be controlled by mesh size. So we don't impact the coho. We go in with a big mesh in the hump tulip side. But here's something else we're faced with. The way they're managing on Region 6, our impacts on Chehalis Chinook is high, very high, when we fish on tulip side. But on the same token, you don't see that in the recreational fishery out in the bay. You're talking apples and oranges. And I don't think the commercial side is getting a fair shake in this. I think if you're going to manage it in aggregate, you have to do it for both. They did that aggregate for the commercial side, and that needs to really be recognized. Also, we had alternative gear that worked for the coho fishery, and it worked rather well. Yet last year, we was not able to use alternative gear. And then also, I'm going to bring back up another issue that happened right here in this room. Larry Carpenter, Miranda Wecker, myself, and a number of others discussed safe areas because what was happening with the Kitsopper plant on the Columbia River. That Grays Harbor and Willapaw was going to be a safe area for the commercial fishermen. What happened to that? Well, we got the shaft on that big time. So, and also, I think that if you don't want to permit the non-treaty fishers to fish, the Indians are going to run right over it, and they're going to take everything absolutely imaginable. So, any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Lick. Thank you. Francis?
Thank you for the opportunity, Commissioners. Three words. Stay the course. The policy was grounded in principle. The metrics may have changed. The principle doesn't change. What we have here today is a room full of powders. We had a bad year. All right, but if you take a look at it objectively, we made the conservation objectives on two out of the three major species. Chinook and Chum did just fine. And we got to thank that policy for helping us get there. We have to thank the staff for adjusting the season in season to make sure that those conservation objectives were met. It helped to make those happen. Even though the action wasn't taken specifically for Chinook, the action wasn't taken specifically for Chum, by taking the action on coho, it helped us to achieve those others. You know, the discussion we had a couple minutes ago is nothing but backpedaling because of one bad year. The only thing that was bad was coho. Nobody anticipated it. It was from Alaska all the way to Oregon. 30%, a third of the fish is all we got. Two-thirds vanished in some black hole. Well, they all died from a bad ocean. They're dying right now. They're going to go back into another bad ocean, same coal. Those first couple months, they come out of the rivers and hit that marine area. They got nothing to eat. They ain't going to make it. We're going to be in the same position. But the principles have to stay the same. You know, we talked about people getting the shaft. The sport guys got the shaft. The really upriver guys got the shaft. But sports got a good whack at those coho as best we could. I went out there every day waiting. Are they coming? Are they coming? Are they coming? No, they never came. The right thing to do is stop. That's what we did. The commercial said they didn't get a fair shake. Well, let me look at some numbers here. The plan came in, and we had a certain amount of fish that we take out of this run in little bites. We fish to a rate. The commercial fishery fishes to a rate. Certain weeks are expected to take a certain bite out of the run. Certain days take a certain bite out of the run. So that's how we do our modeling. Well, it turns out that that run size came in short by a factor of 3.8 to 1. Their catch mirrored their expected catch by the same percentage. 3.8 to 1. We expected them to catch 3.8 times as much as they did. It's in proportion to what came. That's the consequence of a bad run. That's out of our power. We can't do that. But it tells us the plan worked. We did what we had to do, and we kept it in proportion to the run size. So I would say again, stay the course. I'll make one more comment if I could, if I have any time. There was a comment made about heavy leads and downriggers being used to fish. Sport fishers, opportunity starts with a bite. We use the techniques that allow us to get a bite. We catch the fish in proportion to what's there in real time. When you have a coho run that's coming in at a quarter, a third of what it is, and you have a Chinook run that's coming in half again as much as you expect, what are you going to get? You're going to get more Chinook. When the coho are there strong, I put the same gear on the bottom. I catch tons of coho. I can catch 40 coho before noon in my boat. I can always catch 40 Chinook before noon in my boat. The selectivity comes with the live release. Live sorting, live release. That's where the selectivity is. The gear itself is non-selective. And that's, I hate to say that as a wreck fisherman, but it's the live release that makes our group more selective. And it fits. It's a better fit for conservation. Thank you.
Thank you, Francis. You bring clarity to the end of this public input. So with that, if it pleases all, we're going to take a five-minute